Good evening, everyone. I'm giving the first Dharma talk. Eek. So, congratulations. You made it through your first full day here. And I hope you're all settling and finding some ease and some comfort in being together and practicing in this way, finding your way into retreat mode. And I want to encourage you, especially for those of you who are newer, to really allow yourselves time to settle. You know, for many of us coming from our busy lives, we really rush into retreat, finishing up all the things we need to finish and tying up all the loose ends and rushing to get here, arriving with that momentum and encountering, you know, 100 strangers that we'll be in intimate contact with for a week, and perhaps new teachings or new instructions or new teachers. Maybe not sleeping so well or adjusting to this new environment, to new food. It's a lot to take in, and it's like water with sediment that's kind of shaken up. It takes time for that to settle. So please be gentle and patient with yourselves. And it's just the first day. And to remember what an amazing opportunity this is. And what a beautiful place this is if you've had time to go out and to connect with nature. It really is such a precious, precious practice and a precious gift that you've given yourselves. Many people in groups today mention that gratitude for this gift. This quote from Robert Brault: "I count myself lucky having long ago won a lottery paid to me in 7 sunrises every week for life." It's really a sacred opportunity to not be pulled by our daily responsibilities and to actually take this all in. And like I said last night, it's revolutionary to make this time for ourselves. We're all blessed to have this chance, and the gratitude last night was mentioned for all of the causes and conditions that allow us to be here. All of the people who are attending to things for you, all of the cat sitters and dog walkers, the colleagues and friends and family and partners that are allowing you to be here. And then yourselves for having the wherewithal months ago to enter a lottery to make sure that you could get here, to clear that space and time. And I just want you all to just take a moment, you can close your eyes if you'd like, and just reflect on that rare and precious opportunity to recognize the benefits possible in making this time to be on this retreat and to be with these teachings. I'm often reminded of the Meister Eckhart quote, "If the only prayer you ever said was thank you, that would be enough." You can open your eyes if you'd like. I often reflect on my good fortune to have found these teachings many years ago, because not everyone has something like this in their lives. In fact, not many people have this. And when I consider the people in my life and their struggles and often futile attempts to deal with their challenges and the insanity of the world right now, because it's bananas out there, you know, I really have to give thanks and really say thank you that I have this practice and these kinds of spaces to reconnect with what's true, with what's good. And I ask you to remember this because there might be times this week that you need to remind yourself that you actually made the choice to be here. that you paid to be here, actually. That contrary to how your mind may make you feel, that you're in fact not a prisoner against your will. You need to remind yourself, gratitude, thank you, not maybe I can sneak out and drive away in the middle of the night without anyone noticing. Or if you didn't drive, you know, how much would an Uber cost to the train station? It's too much. Now I've scared all the new people. They're like, what's going to happen? Why is she saying that? I am joking, but, we rationally know how fortunate we are to be here, but retreat can be challenging. And tonight, we're going to explore some of the challenges of retreat and what comes up, and really that's to say the challenges of life. Because retreat is just life stripped down and stripped bare, slowed down. And who we meet here is the same us from out there, just without email and Netflix. And we call this practice, and it's called practice for a reason. We are practicing how to meet life, and how to meet experience. And meditation is just a simplified way to practice that. We're not practicing to become good meditators. We're practicing how to be with experiences, both the joys and the sorrows. How to be with life more fully, with more intimacy, with more possibility for joy and freedom. And regardless if you've been on retreat or not, if you're new to practice, if you've been practicing for 1 year or one decade or more, we will all of us, have a variety of experiences here this week. Some will be pleasant and some will be unpleasant, because that's what it means to be human and to live life. We're not trying to engineer only good experiences here, because we can't. We can't control life. We can't control other people. We can't control our own minds, our bodies, not in here or out there. But we can learn how to meet all experience with more wisdom and compassion. Whether those are our own moods or memories or conditioning or external realities of other people, of sounds, of sensations. And we're going to learn to welcome it all. And Ruth gave a beautiful introduction last night, inviting us to welcome all parts of ourselves here. Because sometimes we can think that this practice is about getting rid of certain parts of ourselves. Our negativity, our anger, our depression, our desires. We can have ideas of a spiritual side of ourselves that is in battle with some mundane or profane parts of ourselves. My first teacher, Barry Magid, he talks about this battle with different parts of ourselves, and he says, you know, we can never win these battles, but sadly, we can almost win them. And then we start to lead neutered or constricted lives, where we shut off parts of ourselves. We try to minimize our risk of injury or dependency. We try and cultivate only experiences of stillness or calmness, some idea of peace. We can never win these battles, but we can sadly almost win them. So my invitation to you tonight is to give up the battle. Is to give up these battles with yourself, especially, and give up these battles with life in general. And I want to invite you to continue to welcome all of yourself here, all of your identities, all of your beauty, all of your wisdom, all of your challenges, all of your joys, your fears, your delusions, your restlessness, your doubt, your confusion, your compassion. It's all welcome. And to let go of thinking we have to be a particular way, some idea of a spiritual person or a perfect practitioner. And that actually waking up is waking up to exactly who you are in this moment. Because waking up is a moment-to-moment experience. I like this poem by Izumi Shikibu. She was a 10th century Japanese poet. She uses the moon in this poem. And the moon is often a symbol of awakening in Japanese poetry. She said, "Watching the moon at midnight, solitary mid-sky, I knew myself completely, no part left out." No part left out. So each of us belongs here, and all of us, all the parts of us belong here. So for me, one of the most powerful statements I heard about practice early on was from Joseph Goldstein, when he said, "It's not what's happening that matters, but our relationship to it." And I spent many years, started in a Zen tradition, and then moved to this insight practice, and was really kind of obsessed with getting particular states of experience. My idea of stillness or peace. And that statement, that it's not what's happening that matters, but our relationship to it, really shifted things for me. You know, I started realizing that I could have a easeful relationship to whatever was happening. That ease and peace were not a destination, but actually a practice, a continual practice. We do this by cultivating a friendliness, like the friendliness Tara was describing today, and a curiosity with whatever is happening in any moment. We start with simply being with one breath and another. Allowing what's here as an opportunity to cultivate this sense of ease and peace. So I invite you to close your eyes again. And just reflect on what you might be trying to get rid of. What you might be trying to leave out, what you're in battle with. And see if in just this moment you can be with things just as they are. Sensing the breath, feeling sensation, hearing sounds, So we can think this practice about changing ourselves, but it's this. It's much more simple than that. It's just this moment and then this one. Thich Nhat Hanh said, "There's no way to happiness. Happiness is the way. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. There is no way to enlightenment. Enlightenment is the way." Cultivating this different way of being with each moment. And as Ruth said this morning, this is simple but not easy. The instruction is just to be with one breath at a time. But often that one breath or one moment includes suffering, and it can be hard to be with suffering. I'm curious, how many of you came to practice because of some suffering in your life? And how many of us continue to come to practice because of that? The Buddha said many, many times in the teachings, he's said to have said that I teach one thing, dukkha and the end of dukkha. Dukkha is the Pali word that's often translated as suffering. It refers to this unsatisfactoriness or stress or distress of life. And when he says, I teach one thing, saying I teach one thing, suffering and the end of suffering, it sounds like two things. But he's saying that if we truly are with our suffering, it is its end. It is one experience. If we meet our pain with this allowing, with this ease, if we make ease the way, it is the end of suffering. We suffer because we need our experiences to be different than what they are. And stress arises when we have this thought or these conditions that things are not how I want them to be. And, you know, we have these deep drives in us around scarcity and survival and connection, and they're literally conditioned into the structures of our being. And we've developed strategies to try and control, to meet our needs, but they've become outsized. They've outlived their evolutionary purpose, and we have this zealous need for comfort and a really nervous fear of any pain. So we have this push and pull that we've created, and so we're constantly in contention with life, with reality. We grasp for things that we like, and we push away things we don't like, and it's this tension. We think that all this pushing and pulling will bring us relief, but contention creates tension. Or is it sometimes put in an equation, pain times resistance equals suffering? And that statement that suffering and the end of suffering are one thing are really a reassurance that pain and loss and challenges are natural. We don't have to be in contention with them. I like the way Pema Chodron put it. She says, pain is not a punishment. Pleasure is not a reward. And that is revolutionary. Because in this society, we're given the message that pain is wrong. If we're experiencing pain or loss, grief, discomfort, confusion, oppression, aversion, desires and longings. Basically, if something is happening that culture says should not be happening, we feel like it's a mistake or something has gone wrong or that we've done something wrong. But in here, we're cultivating a different relationship. We're acknowledging that freedom is possible in every moment, regardless what's happening. That pain is not a punishment and pleasure is not a reward. This practice frees us from the delusion that money, success, good health, happiness do not automatically equal joy. And that illness, oppression, discomfort, they do not automatically equal misery. To not be in contention with what's happening is where joy lies for us. My teacher Barry, his teacher is Charlotte Joko Beck, and she said, joy is exactly what is happening minus our opinion of it. And she's making a distinction there between joy and happiness, which might be semantics, but she was saying that, you know, happiness has an opposite, unhappiness. Joy is not about happiness or unhappiness. It's not about liking or disliking. Joy is our ability to be in gratitude and allowing of each moment and understanding that we can find freedom regardless what's happening. We don't have to like it. We don't have to want it. We can also choose to try and change it. But in that moment, there's the possibility of freedom. But a lot of us have bought into the stigma around pain and suffering that's really pushed on us by this culture. And social media doesn't help. These images of shiny, happy people and that things always need to be going right. That if we don't fit some norm of what is good, what is successful, what is dominant, then there's something wrong with us. Bell Hooks said, one of the mighty illusions that is constructed in the dailiness of life in our culture is that all pain is a negation of worthiness, that the real chosen people, the real worthy people, are the people that are most free from pain. A mighty illusion that is constructed in the dailiness of life in our culture is that all pain is a negation of worthiness. We receive messages all the time that loneliness, that illness, that poverty, that depression, that rage, that hardship should not happen. And there is a lot of stigma and shame attached to that. In a couple, both groups this morning, we touched on the fact that a lot of these realities aren't even all ours. You know, there's intergenerational and epigenetic memories and experiences that are handed down. There's this ancestral trauma that we carry within us. It's cultural and familial conditioning. And there is, for me, often a relief in recognizing that it's not all mine. There's a book about epigenetic trauma, and it's titled, It Didn't Start With You. And for the first while that I was recommending the book, I would constantly mistitle it unintentionally, and I would call it, It's Not Your Fault. And I don't have to like those hardships, you know. I don't wish them on others, and I work to try to alleviate my own hardships and the hardships of my communities and of other people, but I don't need to be in contention with them. I'm not struggling with the reality. of what's happening, and I don't add the extra resistance and stress of battling them. I can even bow to them. This is a poem from the Persian poet Rumi. If God said, "Rumi, pay homage to everything that has helped you enter my arms," there would not be one experience of my life, not one thought, not one feeling, not one act I would not bow to. Pay homage to everything that has helped you enter this path. So, as some of you know, I have had cancer multiple times. And I was first diagnosed at the age of 34 with stage 3 breast cancer. I had spent most of my adult life at that point, which was like 10 years, doing yoga, practicing meditation, eating well. And so my mantra was, why me? And I spent a lot of energy struggling with what was happening, being really in contention with my experience. At one point, I was about a year after I was diagnosed, I was in the hospital with kidney failure and awaiting news about a very risky surgery. And I was in a lot of pain. They didn't know what was going on with me. And I was lying in the hospital bed, and I could just feel that why me, that struggle, that upset about what was happening. And then I remembered the practice. And I just brought awareness to my experience, this way of bringing awareness that we've been guided into, the few meditations we've had, this embodied awareness, this sensory presence, to really feel what was happening. And there was pain. It was mostly in my abdominal area. But I realized that it was many different sensations. It was changing. And it was tolerable. It was actually familiar because I'd had it for weeks by that point. I also had a little red button that I could press, and someone would come to alleviate my pain, and I really reflected on the gratitude I had for that. And it was with that presence that this really felt sense, this insight came to me, why not me? There are millions of people who get diagnosed with cancer every year, and thousands of them are children. And many die. So why not me? And that's a new mantra of mine. To really drop the story and feel the feelings. To really know what's happening in that moment and not be caught in an idea of what should or shouldn't be happening. And this isn't true only for physical pain. Actually, recent studies show that social pain, pain that's the result of interpersonal relationships or social realities, it gets activated in the same regions of the brain as physical pain. So it feels painful. But whether we feel emotional or physical pain, we're invited to actually feel it, to not be in contention with it. And it's not that we want difficult things to happen to us. And that's why we cultivate this metta practice of well-wishing for ourselves and all beings. But the freedom is possible regardless what's happening. And this is really important to remember in the world that we live in now. A number of you have mentioned what's going on out there and how much it's impacting you even here. I really love this Albert Camus quote these days. He said, "The only way to deal with an unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion." And in this place, we're really practicing to become free. So absolutely free that our existence is an act of rebellion. Anne Frank, in her diary, said, "As long as this exists, this sunshine and this cloudless sky, and as long as I can enjoy it, how can I be sad?" So how do we become absolutely free? Breath by breath. In each moment, remembering this over and over again. It's actually my favorite translation of sati, this word that we translated as mindfulness, because we're so stuck in our heads, we had to put mind at the start of the word. It's really an embodied awareness. But this translation of the connotation of remembering. So sati can also be translated as remembering. And isn't that what we're doing over and over again, forgetting and remembering? It's also, my teacher Kittisaro talks about it as remembering, like bringing the parts of ourselves back in, really connecting with this embodied awareness. Because the mind will take us to the past and the future, it'll run us around in circles, trying to remember everybody's name from our third grade class, or the lyrics to songs that we've long forgotten, or in an argument with someone in the future, or even worse, in the past. But the body is always here in this present moment. And this simplified practice of just being with each breath, as Ruth said, not as a concept or an idea, but the sensory experience in this moment. And those are like training wheels for us. Because if we can't be with the breath moment to moment, how will we be with the challenges and difficulties and complexities of our lives? I learned how to juggle when I was a kid, and my friend Tanya O'Connor taught me. And you start with one ball, and then you add a second ball, and then you add a third ball, and a fourth. And this practice is a little like that. We start with sitting, we simplify it, we can even close our eyes, we just are with this. And then we try walking, we open our eyes, there's movement, a little bit more. You know, we see what it's like to eat, to interact, to be in groups and speak. So we're adding balls. It's training wheels. And wheel is a good metaphor for understanding our relationship. Because dukkha itself is a metaphor about wheels. So dukkha, this word that we translate as suffering, has an etymology where ka is an axle hole and du means bad. So dukkha means bad axle hole. Sukha, which we often translate as happiness, means good axle hole. And now I'm going to stop saying axle hole because if I keep saying that, it's going to sound like this weird insult, like, you crooked Axel Hall. But really, it's speaking to this spaciousness that we can have or not have. And if we extend this metaphor, if we have a bad wheel, if we have a crooked wheel, it doesn't matter if the road is bumpy or smooth, we're going to have a really difficult ride. So this practice is like truing our wheel, for those of you who are cyclists. You know, we're fixing this spaciousness so that we can meet the inevitable bumps of life with a little bit more grace, with fewer bumps. And I like this metaphor because I like extending metaphors. And if we look at different roads, you know, different folks have different paths, let's say. You know, some roads are pretty smooth. We were graced with an intact family that was fairly healthy. Perhaps access and resources, and not to say that made everything okay, but there might have been some smoothness that ensured that our ride wasn't as bumpy. And then you have whole groups of people and whole communities that have really bad roads. You know, craters and rocks and boulders. And we can work to change what we can, moving things out of the way or taking different routes or taking a break like we're all doing this week. But this road of retreat is pretty smooth. You don't have to worry about food. You have no work to tend to. I hope you're fairly comfortable and at ease, and it can still be a pretty bumpy ride. This practice, I find, helps me to have a better understanding of what's the wheel and what's the road. You know, how do I true my own wheel? How do I release from riding rough roads all the time? And we do that just with following these instructions and this invitation. Developing this practice with kindness and curiosity, just moment to moment. Noticing what's troubling us, whether it's a sound or a sensation, internally or externally. And showing up over and over again for this practice, which takes some effort and some diligence and a lot of kindness and compassion for ourselves. And then we can have these moments, micro moments, large moments of freedom and ease. And we can savor them. Hafiz says, stay close to anything that makes you glad you are alive. That could be goats, could be trees, could be sitting practice, it could be laying down and taking a nap. And we savor those because we will meet these challenges. We'll meet what are sometimes known as the hindrances, these classical difficulties, and let's call them so-called hindrances, because they're also an opportunity to cultivate a different relationship to what's happening. So whether it's desire and longing for a particular sensory experience or particular memory, or it's aversion to what's happening, pushing away pain or sounds or sensations, whether it's sleepiness and battling this kind of constant head nodding, or it's the restlessness of feeling like we're going to crawl right out of our skin, or whether it's this hindrance of doubt, of feeling really confused and unsure of what's happening here. We can meet each of these with this same curiosity and kindness, the same attention to our experience. So I invite you to give up this battle, whatever battle you're in right now, to welcome whatever is happening, to let go of some idea of where you should be, of how practice should feel or look, and to just make room, make space for all of it. So let's sit for a few minutes. This is Joy Harjo, our new poet laureate, who's the first Native American poet laureate. She's of the Muscogee Nation. And this is from her poem, "For Calling the Spirit Back from Wandering the Earth in Its Human Feet." Cut the ties you have to failure and shame. Let go the pain you are holding in your mind, your shoulders, your heart, all the way to your feet. Let go the pain of your ancestors to make way for those who are heading in our direction. Ask for forgiveness. Call upon the help of those who love you. These helpers take many forms: animal, element, bird, angel, saint, stone, or ancestor. Call your spirit back. It may be caught in corners and creases of shame, judgment, and human abuse. You must call in a way that your spirit will want to return. speak to it as you would to a beloved child. Welcome your spirit back from its wandering. It may return in pieces, in tatters. Gather them together. They will be happy to be found after being lost for so long. Your spirit will need to sleep a while after it is bathed and given clean clothes. Now you can have a party. Invite everyone you know who loves and supports you. Keep room for those who have no place else to go. Make a giveaway, and remember, keep the speeches short. Then you must do this. Help the next person find their way through the dark.